This morning, let's start with the scripture. We're in the middle of our series on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and let me remind you once again that calling this the Sermon on the Mount doesn't do us or Jesus any favors. Calling it the Sermon on the Mount suggests that there's a single teaching, carefully developed, and if we are prepared for that, prepared to drink in that well-developed lesson from this sermon, we'll find ourselves staring down a fire hose trying to get that drink. And it doesn't do Jesus any favors either. Jesus is a master teacher, but these three chapters from Matthew don't present a single lesson. They're more like the course outline. Simple introductions to all manner of topics with no invitation to critical thinking or critical understanding. We need context and elaboration to internalize the many lessons here. Remember, Jesus' disciples, they got this quick hitter too, but then they lived with him. And they expanded upon all this teaching. So here's where we're at this morning. Matthew, the 7th chapter, verses 1 through 6. Do not judge, so that you may not be judged. For the judgment you give will be the judgment you get, and the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, let me take the speck out of your eye, while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them underfoot and turn and maul you. Okay, so the first part is the kernel, right? Do not judge, or you too will be judged. Now, it's easy to go outside these few verses and find where Jesus offered further teaching on this topic of judging. Isn't that what he was doing when the Pharisees brought him a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery? They put her in front of the crowd and reminded Jesus that the law of Moses said to stone her. And Jesus said, all right, but let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. Don't judge her unless you're open to judgment yourself. And then he did it again when he said those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Y'all, Jesus didn't ever say that. That's not even in the Bible. But for some of you who think it is, and I'm not judging, judge not, judge not. I don't know if you've ever heard people talking about being convicted by a verse, or if you've ever felt convicted yourself, but this is a verse that's always done it for me. Judge not. In fact, I felt so convicted by this verse during my life that I was quite depressed to find that I was a J for judging instead of a P for perceiving on the Myers-Briggs inventory. I felt a lot better when I finally admitted my disappointment and was reassured that being a J for judging on the Myers-Briggs does not mean that I have failed Jesus. It means that I am a person who likes to have some structure in my life, who likes to receive enough information to make decisions and then makes them. Now, this is over and against P's, the perceivers, who you can say are more flexible. They are content to stay in information gathering mode as long as possible, and sometimes long enough so that their decisions are actually taken away from them. So a little judging might not be a bad thing. And I'm not just making this up all on my own. Remember that we're trying to immerse ourselves in this teaching that Jesus offered on the mountain. So I'm not just isolating that first section, thou shalt not judge. I'm taking the whole section, which includes those last lines, do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine. And my question to you is this, how do I determine what is holy, and what are pearls, and what is sacred, and what is valuable, if I don't do some judging, some evaluating? How do I determine who are the dogs and who are the swine without some discernment? Now, this is very subtle, but it's enough to remind me that Jesus does not prohibit all critical thinking, all evaluation, all discernment. Judge not, lest you be judged. If we place the teaching in the context of Jesus' time and culture, we find that Jesus did not prohibit all judgment. Throughout the history of Israel, the decisions of the judges and the elders have been held up and honored. In Matthew's gospel, we hear Jesus saying, "Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inward they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit, you will recognize them." In other words, judge them by their fruits. What are they producing? I think what Jesus wants to prohibit is quick rushes to judgment, mean-spirited judgments, a fault-finding spirit, a disposition to condemn without examination of the charges. Jesus is asking us not to be prejudicial, not to be like the Pharisees and scribes of his day were so often. They assigned guilt without consideration, certain of their own ideas, their own behavioral standards. For example, a person with a physical malady, an illness, a twisted limb, leprosy was considered by the Pharisees and the scribes to be guilty of sin that had manifested itself as illness or disability. We find ourselves rushing to judgment sometimes. We find ourselves considering whether the person that stands on the corner begging for money is not lazy, irresponsible, drug addicted. We find ourselves creating stories about people's motivations, blaming them for all kinds of imagined slights against us, and then telling the stories far and wide as though they were true. Jesus is not telling us to make no evaluations and form no opinions. Jesus does not ask us to enter a codependent relationship with an alcoholic partner. This is not the meaning of judge not. Jesus encourages us to use our hearts and our minds to evaluate and then respond with compassion and firmness. Go and sin no more, Jesus said. He did evaluate, but then instead of punishing or gossiping, he offered another way. So here, in no particular order, are four things that I hope you will carry away with you today. First, that part about casting your pearls before swine. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you. When I was student teaching, I had a supervising teacher who wanted me to know, if nothing else, not to cast my pearls before swine. Unfortunately, she meant not to share pieces of wisdom, the knowledge that got me excited about literature and poetry. She meant not to show the students what I really cared about, lest they use it against me. She was ready to retire. She was, She was past ready to retire. I think there is a great deal of good that can come from casting those kinds of pearls before the population at large. I think it's a good idea to share the joy you have in singing, the pride that you take in your roses, the happiness you find with your lover, the magic you see in your children. The world has too little of the sharing of these things. And I'm not talking about Facebook, that's a whole other thing. But to share what brings you alive, what fires you up, what your passion is, and share it profligately, to share it extravagantly, and to evaluate the toll that this takes on you, to find out where you may be casting those pearls before people who do not appreciate them, who do not love you, who do trample over them. And stop casting your pearls there. A second thing to think about is, do not judge, I think, is an invitation to find someone innocent until proven guilty. But remember, that is the supposition of innocence if you are a judge, jury, the public, if you have no evidence. I heard a whole lot about the supposition of innocence over these last 2 weeks. I have heard it distorted. I have heard people encouraged to ignore evidence. I don't think Jesus ever intended that. Jesus was very clear that many of the people he healed, that he returned to community, were victims of false judgment, harsh judgment. And he called out the bad behavior of the perpetrators over and over and over. He pronounced judgments over and over and over. I want to illustrate this in a simple little German folktale that I've always loved. There was once a farmer whose axe was missing. A neighbor told him that the mayor's son was a known thief. The neighbor had recently lost the mayoral election. The next time the farmer saw the mayor's son, he noticed that the boy walked like a thief. He looked like a thief. He spoke like a thief. But one day the man found his axe while digging in his valley. And the next time he saw his neighbor's son, the boy walked, looked, and spoke like any other child. Three, don't paint with too broad a brush. To judge broadly is to install white carpet and paint an entire room white and then paint all the trim red. Tape that sucker and put down drop cloths and trim that white room out, and there's no way that red paint won't end up in places it's not supposed to be. To judge too broadly is to let ourselves color a whole person for one act. Now, I'm not talking about cases where the one act is murder or child abuse or something heinous, and I'm not talking about when someone has directly hurt you and those you love, but sometimes we paint with too broad a brush. Prepare yourselves. Truett Cathy is the founder of Chick-fil-A. It is well documented that Chick-fil-A donated millions of dollars over the years to organizations that discriminated against LGBTQ people. Many people have since written Chick-fil-A off, written the Cathys off. Many refuse to eat at Chick-fil-A. I'm asking you to consider whether we have painted the entire Kathy family or the organization with too broad of a brush. We talk often about the sad state of affairs when Sundays are no longer held sacred by any part of American society. In doing so, we often gloss over the fact that we don't care that Saturdays, the Sabbath for other major religions, are not held sacred. But from the beginning, Truett Cathy said, closing our business on Sunday, the Lord's Day, is our way of honoring God. And Adam Chandler, who wrote a book about the enterprise, said, they don't shy away from being family-focused, and they don't shy away from being mission-driven. If there's one thing that everybody knows about Chick-fil-A, it's that it's closed on Sunday. Now, I can see those thought bubbles above some of your heads. Gimmick. Yeah, it makes sure everybody goes on Monday or goes twice on Saturday. But put all that aside, and let me share a fact with you. Chick-fil-A earned $10.5 billion in the United States in 2018. 24/7 Wall Street estimates that they missed out on approximately 14% of their open business days by closing on Sundays because sales are higher on the weekends, which probably cost the chain more than $1 billion. Thought bubbles again. What's $1 billion when you've earned $10.5 billion? But do you know this part too? That in November of 2019, Chick-fil-A made major changes to the list of charitable foundations that they would donate to. And they took off of their list the Salvation Army and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, because those two organizations specifically discourage LGBTQ hiring. They find LGBTQ lifestyle contrary to their understanding of God's will. For some of us, this gets real personal. When I was a junior in college, I raised many thousands of dollars so that I could tour the world with Athletes in Action and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and share good news about God's love for all people. It's kind of messy. Don't paint with too broad a brush. And fourth, this is not everything. I had to cut so much out, but this is important to me. When you start to discern, you start to judge, you start to evaluate, consider who is hurt. I want to share a story from Rachel Held Evans' book, Searching for Sunday. She talks about an organization called World Vision, a humanitarian organization that she had long supported, long traveled with, and they announced publicly a change to their hiring policy, which would allow people in same-sex marriages to work in their U.S. offices. So World Vision announced that they would change their policy and allow people in same-sex marriages to work in their U.S. offices. In response, almost immediately, conservative evangelicals rallied in protest, and within 72 hours, more than 10,000 children had lost their financial support from canceled World Vision sponsorships. Those people were judging the organization, and they were hurting the kids. 10,000 children. So what happened? To try to stop that exodus of support, people like Rachel Held Evans, with a platform, with some following, started making calls, reaching out to their readers, to their listeners, to their congregants, and saying, will you make a one-time donation to help support the children and let the organization know they're going to make it through this, they've done the right thing? And they had already raised several thousand dollars doing this when the CEO of World Vision announced the charity was reversing its decision. They were returning to their old policy against gay and lesbian employees. It had worked, she says, to use needy kids as bargaining chips in the culture war had actually worked. According to the CEO, within hours of changing back, phone calls flooded the offices with people asking, can I have my child back? That brings up some judgment in me. I know you. You're the people who stepped in to the breach. You're the people who stepped in and offered the gifts to let the CEO and the board know that they could stay the course, they were doing the right thing. Rachel could count on you. But what I want to know is, could the children count on you? When they reversed their decision again, if you had stepped into the breach with your gift or donation, would you have withdrawn it again? Who really needed that? The children, not the organization. Now, again, I'm not judging you. It is very complex. I'm just asking you to consider who is hurt when we make judgments. Don't paint with too broad a brush. You know how they say we won't want to be judged by our worst acts. Consider who is hurt. Last, Jesus said, judge not lest ye be judged. I can't find any way around this. I don't care if you never judge a person in your life. I believe you are going to be judged. I couldn't find a way around it. You've got to know who you are when those judgments come. When people criticize you because you've made this decision or that decision, you need to be able to know in your heart that you've used discernment, that you have collected evidence, that you are making an informed decision, that you've considered who might be hurt by your actions. All of these things. Because when it comes down to it, we're going to be judged, going to be criticized. What we can hold on to is who we know we are or who we are trying to be. When we go through these teachings in the Sermon on the Mount, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you this one is this way and this one is that way. I want you to wrestle with it. I want you to see the course outline in Matthew, and then I want you to figure out what else does Jesus say about that? And what else do the Gospels teach about that? And maybe what Paul has to say about that. And what has your experience taught you? When have you been the one hurt by judgment? And when have you rushed to judgment? Judge not, lest ye be judged. is just the very beginning of how we live our lives. Just one little piece. And if you fail at everything else, then the default is this. Love God with all your heart and your soul and your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And that will cover a multitude of failings. Amen.